Slow Burn Media, an evergreen podcast, presents Who Killed? A podcast that provides a voice for the voiceless.
Hello and welcome to Who Killed? I'm your host, Bill Huffman, and this is a Slow Burn Media podcast. And on this week's episode, I will be talking with Sarah Turney, sister of Alyssa Turney, who has been missing for a number of years, and her sister has made it her mission to bring the person that she believes is responsible for her sister's demise to justice. And just this week, there was a billboard erected in Alyssa's honor, and hopefully that will bring some more attention to the case. And again, she also is a part of the Voices for Justice podcast and is wildly successful at that. She knows this case better than anybody, so I am just going to shut up and let you guys listen to part three of my conversation with the one and only Sarah Turney. You're filing all these briefs, paperwork, you're doing all this stuff. 2020 is coming to you. Was it during the production that you became doubtful of his innocence, or when did that change? Or was it, because I read differently, but not everybody has. So how did that go about?
Yeah, no, I get asked this all the time, and there was really no one thing. Like, it was kind of a culmination of everything. So actually, like, the day of the raid, you know, when they came and arrested my dad for all the bombs,
Go back to that. Like, did they notify you about that, right? Or you got some notification? How did this work? Did you write about it? Because I read something that you knew about it, or you were heading home, or you were doing something, you were trying to get there.
Yeah, so I just released the entire conversation from that day with me and the police. So what happened was, at this point, I'm the family contact, so I get notified of everything in the case. And again, I'm 19. And so they call me and they say, come on down to the station. We have information about the case. And I'm like, hopeful. I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, no problem. Like, I have Spanish or whatever. Can we do it before that? And they're like, yeah, like, no problem. You're definitely going to go back to school. Like, they didn't say that, but you know what I'm getting at. So I go down there and I'm all excited and, you know, they can't see me for a while. And I'm like, what the fuck? And so I go back there. And they essentially say, like, they give me a full rundown of the case. Like, if you would have asked me a year ago, I would have told you that this conversation was 5 minutes. And then I actually requested the audio from the police, and I cannot believe they gave it to me, but they did. And it was a full rundown of the case and how they've exhausted every lead, how it's not this guy and it's not her boyfriend, and they don't think that she could have run away. And, you know, they say, oh, you know, Sarah, oftentimes the last person to see them is the person who's responsible, which is my dad. And they keep telling me that she was sexually abused. And they tell me that I had a sister that I didn't know about that my father, like, refused to claim. And then they say, so we're executing some search warrants on your house.
Okay. And back to the sister that you didn't know you had.
Yeah.
Not to make things crazy or anything. Did this sister actually exist?
I believe so. The police say that they know
for sure. They never notified you actually of who she was, though?
I know who she is.
Oh, shit. Okay. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I know who she is. I looked her up. That side of the family won't respond to my messages, which is completely understandable. I do not blame them at all. But I have seen a picture and spoken with my brothers, and yeah, we know who the girl is, and it is 1,000% her, and they don't seem to want to be involved. And that's, like I said, I completely understand.
Yeah, that's just, yeah, that was one of those things that I just didn't really, I don't know, it's kind of touchy subject, so.
Oh, no, it's all touchy,
whole,
you're
fine. I was just going to say, the whole thing's fucked up to begin with, so let's just, you know, be honest and call a spade. So
yeah, there's so many of those things, right? We're like, oh, what about the shooting in the 70s? What about the sister you didn't know about? What about the rape? And it's like, you could just, yeah, you could jump around forever.
Oh God. What was the shooting in the 70s again? I mean, this is how crazy this thing. This is why when we first talked, I was like, holy shit, we got to have another one. Cause this is just insane. Like, yeah. So, okay. Just give me a quick recap and the listener recap, the shooting in the 70s that is somewhat questionable.
Sure. So my dad was a deputy sheriff in Arizona from 1970 to 1974. And in 1974, his brother shot his wife. multiple times. It was an attempted murder. She did not die, thank goodness. And essentially, the police are aware, you know, in Alyssa's investigation, are aware that my father tampered with the crime scene in some way. Something to do with the gun or hiding the bullet, something to that effect. I can't remember exactly what it was. But I've spoken to his brother also, and his brother says that he essentially tried to frame it as if the woman was attacking my uncle. But yeah, so he was a deputy sheriff and he tampered with this crime scene in some type of way and then resigned quickly after that.
Yeah, I would say 4 years after joining the police force is definitely a pretty short time span. Not seeking to get a pension if you're doing that.
Okay. Yeah, and there were no charges ever pressed.
Ah, well, isn't that convenient?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was also having an affair with that woman. Like I said, you could go on forever. But yeah, so that's the quick overview.
Oh, geez. Wow. Gosh, so many wonderful things to, so many avenues to go down that are just.
It's a pattern of behavior. Well, you know, it's a pattern of behavior, which is why I bring it up in the podcast. It's not because I love talking about this poor woman who got shot or whatever, but if he was a police officer, you know, that says a lot about the case. And if he's covering up crime scenes, that also says a lot about the case in my eyes.
Yeah, I think anybody that's seen anything in any television show or read about any corruption or inside dealings with law enforcement, I mean, there is always going to be somebody that's going to kind of cover your back. And if, especially in the 70s, when you really don't have any records, I mean, you can, it's all about you writing mm-hmm. down whatever you saw, and that is what happened. That's it. So you're kind
of. Oh, yeah. Well, and domestic abuse laws were extremely different, if not non-existent. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was not not the time, unfortunately. It was not the era of the Me Too movement. And it definitely was rough on the, sorry about that. I mean, I'm a man, so what am I going to do? I can't.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
But it does. I mean, it sucks. I mean, that's just shitty that it had to be like that or was like that and all that stuff. But so here we stand, and it's 2019.
2020.
Oh, God. I'll edit that out. Or no, I'll leave it. Whatever. Anyway, it's 2020. Shit. Hugh Downs, Barbara Walters. We're here in 2020, though, and your dad's free. Or, you know, not in jail, because if he did this, he's not technically free in his mind. Do you think that you'll be able to get enough media attention to get him brought up in the grand jury?
Yes. 1,000% yes.
Well, that makes doing what you're doing 100% worth it then.
Well, I have to believe that way. You know what I mean? I can't leave any doubt in my mind. And I'm not asking for anything crazy. This isn't a precedent. Like, there have been so many nobody cases that have been tried in Maricopa County and in the United States. I mean, dating back to, I want to say, I can't remember if it was county specific or US wide, but like one of the first cases was like back in the 50s with nobody cases. Like, it's not new. I'm not asking for anything crazy. And although people like to say that there's no evidence, like, I just highly disagree. And yes, I'm biased and I'll be the first one to say that, but like, here's a man with a video library that spans 50 years, and we're looking at one specific day in which his daughter's missing, in addition to another day in which he says his daughter calls, mm-hmm. and those things are missing. Like, all it's almost like an absence of physical evidence. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, I mean, exactly. Yeah, it would be like if you went and got the mail every day at a certain time, and then the Tuesday of the month that your wife gets killed, you didn't go get the mail that day, but every day you got the mail. I would say, yeah, it definitely fits a pattern of, it breaks a pattern is what it does. Mm-hmm. And
well, look at Watergate. You know what I mean? Like that one chunk of audio or whatever that was missing. Like that was a huge point in their case. Why can't we use the same thing here? Granted, it's not the White House and it's not the president, but the same rule applies. I don't know.
Yeah,
I just think,
you know,
that
the same rules
people underestimate
apply to
the value
everybody.
Of the evidence that we do
weird.
Have.
It's weird how that is. The same rules do apply to everybody, president or not. But
no,
yeah,
I'd hope so.
The Watergate example is a good example because it is definitely oh, look at all this tape. And then all of a sudden, boom, the day that you're not talking about, you're supposed to be talking about this and you're not, and there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Too many coincidences to say that it's one thing than it is another.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I feel like the police in the state right now have to make a decision if, like, what's the lesser of two evils for them? This media thing getting bigger and not going away, or them actually exposing what they might have done wrong in this case? Like, I don't know what would be the best path for them, but I have to feel that this is what they're debating, because it's not whether or not my father is guilty. Like, they've believed this for a long time. He's been the only person of interest for over 10 years. There's been no other tips and no other leads, and the evidence just doesn't point anywhere else. As much as I wish it did, it just doesn't. So yeah, they have to decide if they're willing to deal with people on their Instagram for the rest of their lives, or if they really, really want all these missteps to come out in court. You know, they're going to have to answer to a lot. There were two FBI agents that came in and said, why aren't you investigating this as a homicide? And both times they're like, dude, there's no body, no body, no crime. And that's just not the way it works.
No, you can definitely prosecute without a body. It's done all the time. It is definitely not something that isn't out of the ordinary, and I could totally see it being done in this circumstance. Now, do you feel like there are people in the police force that are still kind of, I don't know, I mean, God, 74 was before I was even born, so I mean, I can't even imagine if there's even anybody that's able to still be around. But do you think his ties with the police force have hindered the investigation?
I personally don't, but I'm told by a lot of people that that could be a thing, and I don't know. I, like you said, it was a really long time ago, and he was there for only 4 years, and from everything I've ever read, like, he was the most annoying person to work with that had no friends. So it's not as if he was like this cool social butterfly that made a ton of contacts. Like, growing up, I never met a single person he worked with on the force. Like, it was never a thing. Like, you barely remembered that he was a cop at one time. It could be, but I lean more towards that the police don't want the investigation to come out, because they did a lot of things wrong, in my opinion. You know, like, I always say, had one officer come to our house on the day Alyssa went missing, looked up, pointed to the camera and said, what's that? This would have gone down totally different. They would have said, what do you mean you have surveillance from every day, but not this day? They would have started looking into him immediately, and that didn't happen. And it's a huge misstep, in addition to a million other things along the way.
Okay, so, you know, your dad's free. Has he made any attempt to reach out and try to contact you in the years that he has been released from jail?
No. So in 2017, when he was released, I met up with him at a Starbucks, and we talked in person, and I asked him all the questions, and we went over everything. And then I spoke with him after CrimeCon last year. So it was June 2019. And when I called, he's like, who's this? Like, he didn't even have my number saved. So no, he hasn't reached out to contact me in any way.
Well, I guess there's a little bit of a benefit in that, in the sense that he's not keeping tabs on you, but...
Well, I wouldn't go that far, because he talks to my brothers, and yeah, they talk about it. So he always, like, when I talked to him last, he's like, the first thing I do when I talk to your brothers is ask about how you are. So I'm sure that he's trying to get information the way he can. And like, he knows where I live. You know, we wrote letters when he was in prison. I bought my home when I was 21. So my address hasn't changed. So yeah, he knows where I live, and I'm sure he keeps tabs in his own way.
Man, that's gotta be a little bit of a nerve-wracking, existence.
Sometimes I waver between, like, okay, if he tries to do something, like, here's our evidence. Like, I feel like it's such a strong thing to have in court, which is so stupid and reckless, and do not recommend to anyone listening. But, you know, I have those thoughts, and I waver in between being mad and wishing he would. And then, yeah, sometimes when I'm alone and I hear a bump in the night, I think it could be him.
Yeah, you know, I'm fairly close with James Renner, who's a true crime author and done many, many, many things on Amy and Kelsey and Liberty and all those people. And, you know, he talks about, he's like, well, you know, the way I look at it is if they attack me, at least I know they're guilty. I'm like,
me and James Renner, man, he actually predicted something in this case. Little do people know.
What's that?
So what's funny is I reached out to him because he predicted this accurately. Like, I was like, why are people freaking out? And by people, I mean one person that I don't want to mention, honestly. But so when I reached out to him, he was like, interesting story or something like that. And he goes, how'd your mom die? You know, do you think your dad had anything to do with it? And at the time I was like, no, cancer. Like, he's way off. But come a few years later, I get a document and it shows that my mother died one day before her life insurance policy was due to lapse. And I spoke to an aunt that I hadn't spoken to in 25 years. And she tells me that they all believe that he like overdosed my mom on morphine in order to hit this deadline for the life insurance. So James Renner was like absolutely 1,000% correct. And like, I will forever have respect for him for that.
Wow. Yeah. Knowing that my dad,
what a crazy prediction to make.
Yeah. And knowing that my dad had cancer and died, and the amount of morphine pills that he had, I mean, you could have killed the neighborhood, you know, without even thinking about it. Just, I mean, it's just one of those things. It's just when you're in pain, they give you pain medication, and it's not that difficult to overdose somebody on morphine and have it just show up as, you know, they had overdose on morphine, but they're also dying of cancer. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot that goes behind that, right? Like, he requested specifically that there was no autopsy performed, despite him wanting to sue for lung cancer for the tobacco companies. Like I said, she died within 24 hours of her life insurance policy lapsing. And he knew that because he quit his job. He quit his job and signed a paper that said that the health insurance will die, you know, will stop at this point, and so will the life insurance. And then there's reports of like underdosing and overdosing, and there's a bunch of weird statements. And like, when she died, she freaked out and asked them to call 911. It wasn't as if she like gracefully left, like you hear in a lot of stories. She like literally, like, my aunt and my grandma stepped out for a cigarette and they came back in and she was freaking out, and she had just been given a dose of morphine, and she was begging them to call 911. But
yeah.
But James Renner predicted that. And so, like, forever respect. Well, and see, I'm like, call me the murderer, I don't care. Like, I've had people say it was me before, and I'm like, awesome.
You?
Tell everyone. Like, let's get people talking about this. Like, I don't even care. Like, say whatever you want.
How old were you?
12.
Exactly. What the fuck are you gonna do when you're 12 years old?
No, they're like, sister looks shady as fuck, bet it was her. And I died. I was like, I made it.
Well, like, we've got this kid, we had this kid that disappeared here for like 2 weeks, and it was on the national news, and it was all the parents has got to be involved, blah blah blah, and ended up finding him in a chimney across the street in an abandoned home. And the thing is, people wanted to, like, and they continue, like, if you look it up on Twitter, they're like, you gotta look into the blah blah blah. And somebody reached out to like The Vanished or something like that, and I don't know them personally, but I wrote back to that person. I was like, just to give you a heads up, this is a straight up accident. Let the people that run that show focus on things that are actually nefarious, because this isn't, and you shouldn't like jump to conclusions. There's no way that their parents or anybody could have taken this. You can't put somebody in a chimney. It makes more sense that he climbed up it, like, there was basically like a ladder right next to it.
Yeah, people like to get excited. It's,
I know, but
a
it's
downside.
Like, it still frustrates me to this day. Like, even though it was a week ago or whatever, 10 days ago, I'm just like, yeah, it's shady, but what the fuck? I mean, I was a 14-year-old kid. I did stupid stuff. I'm lucky to be alive. You know,
oh yeah, me too.
I mean, man, have you ever seen the movie It? Like, I'm glad I never saw that before I went in the sewers around here. Jeez.
I was gonna say, I used to go through like tunnels and stuff too. Not sewers, but they had like freeway tunnels.
Exactly. Same thing here. Like freeway tunnels. Not like sewers. Not like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stuff. But like,
not know. Like water on the ground.
Yeah, no. We had water on the ground in some spots, so I guess it was technically whatever. No.
You're like, let's not think about it.
No, we had this thing. It was funny because like, so down the creek from Hellhole was Twin Tunnels. Now Twin Tunnels were they just like you imagine, two tunnels next to each other. Think like California style, like concrete, just square, like straight through. Like we would walk like 100 feet in and it would get really black and then it would start to go down and we'd be like, oh my God, and we'd turn around and we'd leave. And then one day, like this kid who was like a year younger than us was like, oh, come on, just do it. And we're like, oh, we can't let this kid show us off. So like we did it. And it was like the crazy, like you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. It was so dark. It was fucking ridiculous. Like, what are we doing? Like, we're waiting for a storm surge to come through here and just kill us all. And
I've been there.
Yeah, well. Yeah. I mean,
you take your chances. You roll the dice.
You roll the dice. You try to make your, I mean, I'm a skier. I remember skiing out of bounds in Utah before the season even started. And the next day in the same exact spot, a kid died. So it was like,
ooh, well,
just glad I wasn't in, you know, like we had talked about dropping in that side of the mountain. And oh yeah, it was, yeah.
No, that's so dangerous and scary. You're brave.
What's that?
Just skiing.
Oh, hell. That's not...
I like hike and I'm like nervous. It's fine.
Oh, no. Skiing's awesome. Skiing's so much fun. Like my best friend used to be like the manager, Bubba Gumps in Breckenridge. And like he was, you know, college grad from Ohio and just lived out there for like a decade. And I'd go out there and just be like, skiing by myself basically, and I'd look at the kids' skis around me and I'd find somebody with good looking skis, somebody who's obviously a local, and be like, take me to the toughest spot on the mountain. I haven't run yet.
So I'd be like, where are those kids at? I'll be skiing there.
No, I mean, I didn't mean like a kid. I meant like a badass. So yeah, I definitely there are a few things that I would consider myself an expert in, and skiing is one of them. But yeah, skiing and sailing, definitely.
Well, hell yeah. You can't just podcast. It'll drive you insane.
Especially if you just sit in a closet all day. That's the best thing about this business, is that we're all out to hook everybody up. And, you know, like the whole thing about like Slow Burn Media, like the whole thing behind my company that like, started my company last year, but like basically just to give people a platform to discuss the cases that otherwise couldn't get discussed on, you know, mainstream media, or don't have a platform for it. And anybody who's got an important story to be told, I'm always cool with welcoming into the family.
I love that. That's awesome. We need more people like you in podcasting for sure.
Yeah, it's like I feel like an old man compared to the to some of the people, but it's I'm not. I've worked in every medium of media, so like I've done newspapers, I've done radio, I've done television, I've done podcasting, I've done blogging, I've done, you know, like you name it, I've done it. So I just feel like I'm kind of at that point where it's time for it to all make sense.
Yeah, no, you got to do it your own way for sure.
Time to connect the dots. You ever seen that Steve Jobs inauguration speech from Stanford?
No, I haven't.
It's only 14 minutes of your time. 14 minutes of your time. Watch it after we get off today. It's you will feel empowered.
No, check it out.
It gives me chills. I mean, I'm a huge Apple guy, but like I love Steve Jobs in the sense of just, he's one of those people that was a total fuck up but successful in the same breath, and like fuck up in the sense that he was a fucked up person.
Yeah, no. And I love stories like that. Like I probably consume more like business stuff than true crime stuff, to be honest. It's just like,
Sure.
I feel like you have to look to those people if you want to be successful. You have to look up. You can't look down, if you
Oh,
will.
God, no. No, I mean, my favorite... Oh, I could send you a list of the business books that I've read in the last year, but, like, I love reading books about, like... There's one thing about a combination of true crime and business is, like, reading about all the white-collar crime.
Yeah, some swindled action.
Oh, I mean, I can't get enough of the Enron thing. Like, I even to this day, or too big to fail.
Yeah.
Jeez, like, wow, bunch of morons. And my dad was a banker when he was alive. You know, he was. I remember him being like, "I have to go to Palm Beach and do some due diligence on these banks that National City bought," which was a bank around here. He's like, he'd come back like a week later and be like, "Nobody did any fucking due diligence."
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck did they just buy? Like, they're just all like fake. It's just
it's so insane.
Yeah. Not to spend literally 10 minutes going off the subject matter.
Oh, you're fine.
I like to do that on occasion just to because I do that.
No, I like talking about the industry. It's nice to do, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the industry itself is it's interesting and it's changing, and like we're still at ground level, I'd say. Maybe first floor, but still at ground level for the most part.
I can't thank this week's sponsor enough, Podcorn. They make connecting podcasters with sponsorship opportunities such as host read ads, topical discussions, interview segments, easy as possible. I've been working with them for a while now, and they are by far the easiest way to monetize your podcast. They have taken what had been a time-consuming part of the podcasting process and have made it easy for me to focus on what we as creators do best. Create. If you're looking for a way to get paid for the hard work that you put into your podcast, then look no further than Podcorn. You set the rate you believe to be fair and deal with the brands directly. There literally is no middleman. And at Podcorn, you will never give up any rights to your podcast. Their mission is to make sure creators like me are compensated in an appropriate manner. You can check them out on their website, podcorn.com. They have packages for podcasts of all sizes. And again, I can't thank them enough for making my life easier. I've provided a link in the show notes as well, so you can find out exactly what Podcorn can do for you.
Anyway, all right, let's jump back in. Crime Con, I mean, being on Podcast Row last year when I was there, it just felt like I never had time to do anything.
The fortunate part about that was it wasn't my booth. So I was there with Missing Alyssa, and I was also very fortunate to have a lot of meetings with a lot of people, and, you know, I was being pulled everywhere, if you will. So I didn't spend a ton of time on Podcast Row, but we did have a live show.
Aren't you the mover and shaker?
Yeah. I mean, it resulted in zero deals, which was really exciting for me. I really loved that for the case. Cause it was like Dr. Oz and like, we'll get you on TV here and we'll get you on TV there. Oh my gosh, this is going to be great. And then I think they look into it and they're like, oh my gosh, this is kind of up in the air. It's like kind of a weird legal area to be speaking about this. It's like too much of a risk for them to put me on Dr. Oz or Dr. Phil without like my dad there or whatever. That's how I'm justifying it. Or maybe they just hate me and don't want to do it. I don't know. And I don't care. But yeah, I didn't get to spend a lot of time doing that. But yeah, I did a live show and I went to some meetups after, but I wasn't a podcaster then. So I just kind of attended everything, which was totally fine. But I would love to have some type of official meetup because I have plenty of energy for these events. It's just like the staying out till like 5 a.m. that I cannot hang.
Boring. No. Stop that talk. I can't stay up till 5 a.m. either. I mean, shit. If I stayed up till 5 a.m., I don't even want to talk about it. That would be the worst thing in the world.
I did it. It was the worst thing in the world.
Oh, you did?
One night. Ruined Crime Con.
No, I refuse to do it. Been there too old. Not that I couldn't do it. That did not mean, just because I said I was too old did not mean I can't do it. I did not mean that in any way, people out there. It just meant I know better than to stay up till 5 in the morning if I have to stand and talk to some people for 2 hours and talk about different cases. You know, it's one of those things that it is fun to go out. I mean, I know that when Nick and his wife, like, we went out. God, we went to this really great, great dinner, and that Saturday night, and you know, we were out till 2:30 or so.
Yeah. But you get swept up. You get so excited. You see people you don't get to see all year. Like, I don't, it's a really fun time. But yeah, I want to do meetups. I'm not on like whatever text chain every other podcaster is on or whatever.
I'm not either. Like, so don't worry.
I mean, well, people are like, oh yeah, there's a meetup at 9. There's a meetup at 11. And I'm like, where, how? Like, I know how to use Google and I don't see any of this. Like, where's this coming from?
Yeah. So a lot of that stuff just is word of mouth. At least that's the way that I figured it out last year. I did mention something to the captain about possibly doing a meetup with people from, you know, at Passion Case. Obviously, they are friends with the people from Gen Y and Tim and Lance and all the other people that have been on the show so far.
Yeah.
Group meetups are fun because they're just sort of, you know, they're so casual and they're not, you don't have to do anything formal. It's just, let's all meet at a bar and drink. Like,
I'm so down.
Like, that's the way I look at it. And you know what's so cool is that, like, the actual place that CrimeCon is this year is significantly more expansive than the venue from last season's CrimeCon, meaning there are pools and bars and restaurants and all sorts of things that exist within the actual hotel that didn't necessarily exist at the hotel previously. Now there was a bar and yeah, a restaurant and all that stuff, but this is much more of a resort type place, which is,
yeah, it's huge.
It's enormous and it should be fun. Like, this should be fun. It shouldn't be tons of work. Like, this should be a good time.
No, and I have so much fun. Like, meeting people is the best for me. Like, if I had to choose between meeting fans and meeting other podcasters, like, no offense, I would meet fans all day, every day. Like, I think, like, fostering these relationships with people online is amazing and great, and I really do feel that support. But then I see them in person, and, like, I break down. Like, it's like, my internet friends are real when I see them, you know what I mean? It's just, I get so excited and I love meeting them, like, above everything else.
Yeah, I always laugh about that with, like, the internet friends. It's like, you know, you can look at it in so many negative ways, but there are so many positive ways to look at it too. If you just filter out the garbage, because it's just garbage. I mean, anybody who insults you or does this, does that, you look at their following list or, like, how many people they follow. Like, it's like 12. Like, okay, you just joined today to be a fucking dick. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Way to ruin my day for being an asshole and you don't even have any friends. Like,
I, like, pride myself on turning people who hate me into people that care about the case. And I've done it a few times. Like, it's kind of my favorite thing to do. I don't get them a lot, but, like, when I posted something on, like, the Phoenix Facebook page. Oh, they were posting about how a school was broken into, but they had the, like, they knew who the person was. And they were just like, look at how sad. This school has so much damages. Here's the teenagers that are responsible. Like, isn't this sad? And so I posted and I was like, you know, like, I'm pretty disappointed in the way that you're using your following. Like, this is a case that has a conclusion. There's no call to action in this. Like, I was being a brat. It's fine. Like, I was having a day. And, but sure, I said it in a professional manner, and this woman comes on and she's like, listen, my kids go to this school. Like, that's not cool. Like, this is an important issue. And I was like, ma'am, I completely agree with you. You know, I just wish that they would have included some type of GoFundMe or some type of fundraiser so that we could contribute to this cause. You know, this is what I'm doing with my sister and why I did that. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. And she was like, I read about your sister and I completely understand why you're posting on this. Like, you're exactly right to post on this. That's out of control. That's insane. Like, you're so professional. And I won her over. And now she, like, follows the case. And it's kind of my favorite thing to do because you don't have to be mean. Like, even when people are mean to me, I try to just, like, you know, I completely understand why you feel that way. You know, here's why I believe this. Thank you so much for commenting.
And that is a very good example of how to handle critique online. But what I will add is that if you spend all your time trying to make people happy, you won't be able to do exactly what you need to be doing. But I will give you my own example of doing that exact same thing. Just in the last week. Somebody was like, blah, 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 something about audio. And this, I think they were listening to an episode from like literally when I first started. I had no flipping idea what I was doing. And the audio, I'm sure, was freaking terrible. And something like, I don't know, the audio is too low. And like, I agreed with her. Maybe it wasn't that one. But then there was somebody who was like, something about this. And I go, well, thanks so much for your kind comments. I'm very appreciative of you taking the time to comment on my life, and I'm glad to see that you're doing so much with yours.
Nice.
And it's like, I put that on Twitter and I was like, go fuck yourself. You know, and I don't fucking care. Go fuck yourself. Worry about your own fucking life. You want to do something about like, I was like, basically respect the fucking platform. You can fucking hate me as much as you want. I don't care. That's fine. You dislike the way that I talk. You don't like my voice. That's fine. You don't like my pauses or the way that I pronunciate things. Fine. Respect the freaking platform. Respect the people that I interview. Respect the fact that I bring attention to cases that may not get the attention that they deserve on a mainstream level, because I don't see you doing it. I didn't say that. But I said everything before that. I mean, like, literally. And I was just like, I was having a day. I was like, no, fuck you. Like, that's, I don't need to take your BS right now. Like, shut up and like, stay in your lane. You don't do this. You don't know your business. You don't know how to do this job, nor do you even understand what it is that I am doing. So shut the fuck up and find another show to listen to. I don't fucking care.
Yeah, it's just trolls. Like, you can't let them get to you. And yeah, when they're that bad, I usually won't say anything. And then people will go after them. Like, do you know who this is? Like, she's trying to do this. Like, how dare you? And like, I was in customer service for a very long time in high-end baby retail, which meant I was dealing with high-end customers that were pregnant also. So I learned very quickly how to be someone that is very hard for you to be mad at. Like, if you come to my store and your blanket has faded after 6 years, that is our fault. I am so sorry that the quality is not up to the standard. What can I do to make that right? And I think that that's really carried over with me through this. And it's something that just comes natural and I feel is the right thing to do. And I think has really done me a service. And it translates to everything. Like the way I talk to the cops, like I literally just said my first curse word in an email to them ever. And it was like, I don't know what the hell is going on or something to that effect. And it's the first time in 10 years. Like I try to be so, so deliberately logical and irrefutable, if you will. Like the podcast, like here's all the information, believe what you want. I'm going to go over every single theory I can think of, including those that don't include my father. Like I'm just trying to put it out there, but everything points to one thing. Sorry, it is what it is. Like, again, just setting it up in a way that hopefully not too many people can be mad at me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not looking at trying to ruffle people's feathers or make people mad or do things this way or that way. It's just more like the stupid shit that people complain about just sometimes gets under your skin. And it's just like,
yeah,
all I'm doing is, this is not like my full-time job, you know, as much as I'd like it to be. Like, I'm not there yet. Sorry, guys. Yeah. Like, if this is what I did every day, all day, then yeah, it'd be fucking awesome. But you're going to get a screw up here and a screw up there, a mispronunciation here, mispronunciation there. I'm sorry. I'm not Dan Rather yet. It's just not there. I can't help you.
Yeah. It's like, listen, it's 4 a.m. I'm tired. I have to work in the morning. I have to get this podcast out. I've made no money off this podcast. I'm eating ramen noodles for dinner. Uh-huh. I'm sorry if it's not perfect, but I'm trying.
I hate to fucking even admit this to you right the fuck now, but I literally ate ramen noodles yesterday.
See?
I mean, this is fucking pathetic.
It's not what people think it is. Like,
it's great. Yeah, like people are like, oh, you know, it's gonna, and I I do enjoy it. I don't get me wrong. This is nothing against the industry or anything like that. And I do believe it is the future, but it takes effort and it takes sacrifice out of our lives to do that. And I don't think people put any bit of thought into that at all before they put their 2 cents online, because it's like, oh, these guys must be making blah, blah, blah. No, we ain't. It's not like that. This is more of a service. It's like public access to a degree, but
we are PBS. We are funded by viewers like you. but it's like, yeah, I mean, I do feel very fortunate in that I feel like I do have somewhat of a special pass because I am, you know, the family member of a victim and a podcaster. Mm-hmm. So people, I think, have more mercy when it comes to different things that they might, you know, say about other podcasters. Like, I feel like I definitely get a little more leeway because they feel for me more.
Oh, I would definitely say that you should definitely get a bit of more of a pass, but I'm
acknowledging my privilege.
I would also say I don't want people to think that I'm receiving negative comments like on a daily basis. I'm talking about a handful over a couple year span. It's more of just, in the 100 good comments, 2 negative comments can ruin the batch. It's just,
yeah,
it's just human nature.
Exactly. Well, it's like when you reflect back on a relationship, right? It's like, you don't remember the 5,000 times they said, I love you, or that you look great. You remember like the 1 or 2 things they said that were really mean or horrible, or that you took the wrong way or whatever. It's the same way with online. Those comments stick with you more. The thing is with internet trolls that I don't know that all of them realize is that the way that the social algorithms work is if you dislike a video, if you leave a negative comment, you're just helping that person. So like, go for it. Like, comment all day that I did it. Like, comment right now on this and say that I killed my sister. I don't care, because it helps with engagement and it helps more people learn the story. So like, jokes on you, trolls.
I mean, I've had people say James Renner killed Amy Mahalovic.
People have said that my dad's the Zodiac killer, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you should look into that. Let's make a series about it.
Yeah, okay. I got some land down in Florida, that's for sale. Are you interested? Yeah. It's cheap. It's cheap. It's only like $500 an acre. But like, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you're doing a service for yourself, your family, but you know, your sister, you're looking for answers. Sure, there are podcasts out there that are there to make money and they're there to do this and there to do that, but I think there needs to be some bit of a differentiation between the two, of one being advocacy and one being storytelling. Like, I hate doing stories that are solved.
I feel the same way.
You know, because I don't feel like I'm not adding anything to the case. What do I add to the case?
Yeah, I feel better when I'm working towards something.
I mean, just, yeah. I mean, you have to have something to shoot for, especially when there's so much, like we talked before about all the negativity that you talk about. Or you research or you discuss, or I mean, you're just always talking about death and despair and all the negatives in life. And it's like, fortunately, life isn't all dwell and, you know, hell and all that crap. It's not all that. It's
no,
you know, there's more to it. And, you know, this is just a part of what we do. But the whole reason for what we do is to find answers to the questions that we have questions about. I mean, like, why wouldn't you want to know and put your father behind bars for something that you are convinced that he did?
Yeah. And I mean, the police are also convinced. It's like, I have to like drive that point home so much. But if this was a closed case and my father had already been tried, or anyone had already been tried for this and convicted, I would not be here today. I wouldn't be telling this story. I wouldn't be doing the podcast. I wouldn't be doing a million interviews, because it's not something that brings me joy to just tell the story. What brings me joy in doing this is knowing that I'm working towards actually getting her justice. Like, that's what makes me happy. That's what combats me having to relive this trauma every day, you know, and we talked about, you know, upsides and downsides of me kind of being on both sides, but it's like, another thing is, it's not just the time factor, like it's emotionally draining. And there are days where I just say, like, I just can't, I just have to step away for a second. And it's not necessarily energy or bandwidth, it's like emotions. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, fighting towards an active cause is everything for me, and I couldn't do it otherwise.
Yeah, I definitely think you need to step away when you start to feel like that, because when you cover cases, I don't know how it would be to cover a case that's so close to me, like the case that you cover, but I mean, I grew up with the Amy Mahalovic case. She was the same age I was. I mean, it was that case that I grew up with 3 miles from my house, but when I started the podcast, yeah, like that was part of the drive, was maybe at the very least I'll bring attention to a case that needs more attention and it needs resolve, because one, that family's not getting any younger, the mom's already passed away, and the city's still freaking out about it, so we need to do something. And I think Renner actually directed me towards that. He's like, do what you know. So that's how I ended up there.
Yeah, no, I think it's super important to be passionate about it and feel like you're making a difference, as opposed to just telling the story, which I understand that asset, you know, that aspect too. I'm not trying to shame anybody for what type of stories that they tell, but yeah, I feel better when I'm working towards something I can help, and I want to make this something I do forever. You know, once Alyssa's case is done and I can hopefully have some closure there, I want to help other people. And, you know, not just missing people, but, you know, like wrongful convictions and just anything where there's just a super wrong that needs to be righted. I just want to be there and I want to help give people like me resources, because there's no handbook for this. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I've learned everything by making mistakes along the way. And I really just want to help people avoid some of those mistakes. So yeah, it's definitely turning into a life mission versus just a one-time telling of my sister's story. And like, people have to remember, like, I thought this was going to be like, okay, like, I know this story up and down, I'll just retell it. But when I got all those documents, like, that's new to me. When I did these interviews with people I haven't talked to in 25 years, like, that's new to me. In episode 9, I released 40 minutes of my interview with the police, and I only heard that like 2 months ago. Like, I'm experiencing this with the listener.
Many thanks to this week's sponsor, Podcorn. They make connecting podcasters with advertisers a simple and easy process. And the best part is, you get to set your own rate and you don't have to deal with the middleman. So visit them at podcorn.com. And thank you to Sarah Turney for joining me again in the studio to discuss her sister's tragic case. She is obviously an amazingly strong person and is very dedicated to putting the person that she believes responsible for her sister's disappearance behind bars. And thank you guys, the listeners, for tuning in. As a reminder, I drop new episodes of Who Killed every Friday, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, you name it, you'll find it. For the second year in a row, I will be representing Who Killed Amy Mahalovic in my passion case on Podcast Row at CrimeCon 2020 in Orlando. Now, the dates were originally set for May, but obviously those have been changed, and the new dates are actually Halloween weekend, October 30th through November 1st. So if you guys want to save on your ticket, you can use my promo code AMY2020. Again, that's AMY2020 at checkout. If you do enjoy this podcast and my other shows and would like to help support my journalism, you can click on the donate button on the left-hand side of slowburnmedia.com. That is slow minus the W. Now, you can also contribute to the show via the Venmo app with my username at bill-huffman-3. I will also provide a link in the show notes. Every contribution helps keep these Slow Burn podcasts running. Now, if you do leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening, that also helps keep the important cases that I've covered in the spotlight. So anyone with information regarding Alyssa is asked to contact the Phoenix Police Department at 1-602-262-6141 or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST. Sarah would also like people to use the hashtag #JusticeForAlyssa while discussing her case on Twitter. That just helps keep her case in the spotlight. If you have any information regarding any of the other cases and unsolved cases I have covered, please contact the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI. Now, if you'd like to stay up to date on the shows I have covered, as well as the new shows I have in the pipeline, please follow me on Twitter. Part 4 and the conclusion to my conversation with Sarah Turney drops next Friday. So thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, stay healthy and be safe.
AM, the comedy horror podcast that holds weekly gatherings around the campfire. Let me tell you what you're going to get. You're going to hear stories about demonic possessions, prison stabbings, skinwalkers, glitches in the matrix, cult leaders, missing 411, night marchers, Operation Paperclip, Mesopotamian devil worship, and so many monsters it'll give Kanye West a runaway for his money. Pop and meme culture also aren't off topic. A camp where laughs and scares are constantly competing for first place. We're just a group of friends trying to bust each other's balls, find the best stories, and expand the circle in the process. 3 a.m., the comedy horror podcast, not for the faint or fragile of heart. Let's go.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I could no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts. People who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get 6,000 cash, give us each 3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com or wherever fine podcasts are found.